doubled. He's going to drive the lane. Crosses up Van Hula. Okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the west side. No good. But she's going to get another rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now. Only on 103.
Live from the campus of Illinois State University, this is the Red Zone. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Anthony Freddy. I'm joined alongside my wonderful co-host, partners in crime, Joey Dwyer and Leo Stodher. And fellas, we made it to another Thursday.
It's always the best. We were talking right before the show. I wish this was the end of my week every week, but I got class tomorrow. But oh my God, how this is just like, this really does feel like the end of my week because I can phone it in tomorrow and then we got the weekend. So I cap off my week talking about sports. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I was itching to get here today all day just because the way my schedule worked out, I didn't have any classes today. So I've just been like sitting at home all day just waiting for this to come. And it's been, the anticipation's been building and I'm just very happy to finally be here.
Yeah, especially now since it's a Halloween. It's crazy. It's the last weekend in October and then it's November. Like, we're going to be in Thanksgiving break like before we know it.
And boy, am I excited.
Get some home, have some turkey and some stuffing, a full dinner. But speaking of full stuff, we have a full show for you tonight. We're talking about a lot going on. The White Sox made an interesting hire. We're going to talk some football as well, the pick six. But we're going to start with a big thing that's been unraveling primarily here in Illinois with winter sports, mainly with basketball. There's been a lot of things going on, and Governor Pritzker is saying some things that the IHSA Board of Directors is kind of not in agreement with.
Yeah, so here's the story as we have it. Keep in mind, this is a story that's still developing. These are the facts as we have them. Starting on Tuesday, Governor Pritzker announced that basketball would be reclassified from a medium risk to a high risk sport. Now, with the guidelines that he and the Illinois Department of Public Health had laid out way back in August, it said that a high-risk sport cannot be played in the winter campaign. So keep in mind that Wednesday at noon, the IHSA Board of Directors was holding a meeting to determine some new guidelines and some rules about the winter sports season. As from what I've been able to tell, they were blindsided by that announcement that this was not a mutual agreement upon that risk classification. So on Wednesday, the Board of Directors announced that basketball will still be played in the winter, with practices starting as early as November 16th and games being able to start 2 weeks after that, and that it would be up to the school districts to determine how they wanted to proceed. They did announce that under those new guidelines that players would be required to wear masks and there would be no fans in attendance. And then today, Governor Pritzker announced that he overruled that decision, that basketball will be pushed from winter to spring due to the classification of a high risk. This now pulls up a overlap for the spring sports season with football, basketball, boys soccer, and girls volleyball all going. These are among the highest risk sports under the classifications he put out. That is everything that's happened so far. Obviously, we are still waiting on a statement from the IHSA in conjunction with what Governor Pritzker put out earlier today.
And wow, that was a lot to digest. And we have done, in the past on the Red Zone, we've covered a lot of high school sports. Obviously not as much for us to cover right now, but there have still been some lower risk sports going on. But this kind of slap fighting from the IHSA and the governor is something that I have never seen before.
Yeah, this has been very strange because talking about my experience a little bit, because I have a younger brother who is an IHSA athlete, what struck me as the most frustrating is there's been a lack of communication from both parties to the athletes as well, because my brother's a football player, and all summer they were preparing that the season is either going to be canceled or that they're going to be starting at the end of August like they regularly were, but there was no communication on how they should be preparing. It took until, I think it was mid-August, where they finally got the announcement that they're going to be playing in the spring instead, and that there wasn't really much input from the schools. And that's what seems like the sentiment was from the IHSA with this announcement about basketball, too, because there's been very little dialogue from any of the parties to the actual schools in the previous few weeks about what they're going to be allowed to do. So it feels like it is a little frustrating from the athlete's standpoint, where you don't know what the fate of your sport's going to be until right before the season is starting.
Yeah, and you mentioned it a little bit, that just with a lot going on, I agree that it not really a ton of communication going on between the IHSA and Governor Pritzker, and especially in these times. Obviously, things are changing, but you've got to communicate with people basically as fast as you can, like trying to get information going as clear as you can with everything. And while they're trying to think about what ideally it could be like, I mean, they do want to keep the athletes' interest in mind, or the student athletes, I should say. I mean, I don't know what they've been doing, but maybe sending out like surveys to some of the schools and the athletes, seeing like what they would think. Because in high school, some of these student athletes do play more than one sport. Like, they could play usually football in the fall and then in the winter play basketball. And now with both these sports moving to the spring, now it's like they're going to have to make a choice.
And that is exactly what a lot of the detractors are saying about Pritzker's decision to bump the basketball season back, is now, you know, athletes who play multiple sports are going to have to choose which sports that they want to play, and that is going to limit a lot of opportunities. Pointing back to our interview last week with Mike Huff, he thought he was going to be a football player, ended up playing baseball professionally. And so it's limiting a lot of opportunities for these kids to get their senior year in the sports that they've played throughout their entire lives. And if they are moving to the next level, the odds are they're not going to be playing all those sports in the next level. But on the flip side of that coin, there isn't a whole lot of justification for playing a high-risk sport right now, other than the fact that these kids are losing out potentially on their senior season, because something that Pritzker said in his announcement, he said, we want kids back in school. Sports is a secondary question. And I think that has to be the approach from not only the governor and the higher-ups in the state, but from IHSA, because if they don't have school, they're not going to be playing sports.
Right, and I think part of the rationale with Pritzker was, this was what I was reading from some of the local Chicago high school sport beat writers, was that why Pritzker is coming down on basketball so hard is that there have been some AAU basketball tournaments going on all over the city, largely unregulated, where there's been no mask wearing, no social distancing, parents in the stands. So I think this was his way of trying to stop that, was by moving it to high risk. But so now, they've been trying to regulate AAU basketball for years in terms of how many games can be played, who roster rules and all that, and it really hasn't worked. But what I think the problem now is going to be that the IHSA basketball was what you could regulate, what you could control, you could enforce these guidelines there. Now, the kids are still going to play AAU basketball. Now they might be going crossing state lines, going and playing in tournaments in Wisconsin or Michigan or Kentucky. I think you're losing. You don't have any control over what these kids are going to do, because the basketball kids are the recruiting for basketball happens based on what is done at the AAU circuit. Very little of it actually comes down to what they do during high school season. So these kids are still going to be playing in these tournaments because they're trying to get recruited. And so there's little regulation the state can do there. So I think this is probably the biggest problem that comes out of that.
And Leo, you've been covering this story extensively for the TV station as well. So you were telling me that you got a chance to talk to Normal Community's head boys basketball coach Dave Witzig about kind of his thoughts on this whole situation.
Yeah, so he talked a little bit about what basketball means to the state of Illinois, and I thought this was a pretty good clip, so I'll play that right here for you guys to get a listen to.
I think the state of Illinois needs basketball. I know that, you know, it's a great basketball state, and we have a fun conference around here. We play the Peoria schools and the Bloomington and Normal West and Champaign schools in Danville. So we have a great basketball conference, and we would really love to play with those guys and see who wins the conference this year.
And so it is a little bit what I was saying with the AAU versus IHSA, where there's so much tradition, so much sense of community that comes with the playing basketball for your school, that I think there is a better way you could regulate it. If schools are only playing teams in their geographic region, like we kind of saw with the fall sports, I think you could control that better. But I think with the current plan, there's the potential that this could get out of control really quick, because the kids are still going to be playing basketball. The top players are still going to be playing basketball, and the IHSA won't have any control over that.
And so, Leo, do you think that the governorship went after the wrong section of youth basketball? Because from what you've been saying, it sounds like that high school basketball is not the issue, and regulating that is only going to worsen the existing problem, whereas if they would have gone ahead and regulated the AAU tournaments, then high school basketball could have been played in a safer manner?
I think that's what I am saying, yeah, that the travel basketball is where the problem's coming from. And now that by coming down on the high school basketball, it's almost like you're making more problems, because there's really no way of regulating the AAU circuit, because that's its own independent thing. The IHSA can recommend stuff for them to do, but they don't necessarily have to listen. I think that's more the Illinois Department of Public Health can come down on them.
Yeah, and you mentioning it with the AAU tournament, kind of, I mean, that's kind of what these student-athletes want to do. They want to be able to play basketball, and like you mentioned, Leo, they start at that level. And there were coaches that we've been able to talk to that have, you know, shared the possibility of, yeah, maybe other student-athletes might try and compete with teams in other states just so they could get some competition in, because a lot of these student-athletes want to play professionally and in college as well, so they really want to be looked at, not want to wait until like a couple months before they're supposed to declare for college to like make a decision.
Yeah, and that's basically why I think the AAU circuit is what it is, because basically in terms of high school recruiting, your summer going into your senior year, that's where the offers come from. That's where your tape's going to come from for most basketball recruits in Illinois, that they want you to already be committed by the time you start your senior season. So I think that by not letting them play high school basketball right now, the ones that are still trying to get that film out there, they're still going to be going and playing basketball somewhere else. And so it really is just they're creating more problems. And I just feel like it's the kids that are going to suffer. And the problem is it's the top kids are the ones that are playing the AAU. The kids that just your good kids that play, you know, three sports for their high school that love basketball that maybe don't play AAU. These are the kids that are facing the brunt of the consequences here, because now they won't be playing basketball this winter, largely because of the actions of some other players.
And that all goes back to the fact that there has not been a cohesive plan for high school sports in the state of Illinois that are higher than low risk. And you're absolutely right, Leo. The students are going to suffer if you're a student that plays football, basketball, and soccer, you're going to miss two of those sports, because you have to choose one in this like pseudo spring season, and it's just obviously not the optimal way to go about it. And other states have done it better, and it's just kind of sad for the students who are going to have to make that choice between sports that they love to play.
It really is just a very tough situation, and you're putting these kids in the position where they have to make almost an impossible decision. And it like I said earlier, that there's just been no communication to them, that the adults are doing all the arguing and the kids have kind of been left at the wayside just having to deal with whatever the consequences of these arguments are.
Yeah, and as we mentioned at the beginning of this segment, this story is just unfolding. It just got started. As you mentioned, Leo, it started on Tuesday with Pritzker saying that, and then now, just a couple hours ago, or a little over an hour ago, I should say, when Pritzker announced that he's putting a halt on it and moving it to the spring. So obviously this is going to be the start of something bigger. We're going to see how the IHSA responds. We're going to see potentially how the students respond. But that'll just about do it for this segment on IHSA Sports. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to head to the baseball diamond to discuss some White Sox news. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. That is Paul DeYoung bringing us back, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. And speaking of the, or I guess with the Cardinals, a lot going on with baseball as it just ended with the World Series between the LA Dodgers winning it in six games and the Tampa Bay Rays. Wow, what a series, especially game four.
All of those games were incredible, and obviously we've got some other baseball news to get to that we'll get to here in a second. But I'm glad we're taking a second to talk about the World Series, because in that game six, Kevin Cash's decision to pull Blake Snell when Snell had made it twice through the lineup without giving up a run, I believe it was two hits, that is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. And I think Michael Wilbon said it best when he was talking on Pardon the Interruption, when he was like, I take offense to this as a baseball fan. I take offense to this, because if you are in charge of this baseball team and you can't look up from your number sheet and use your own two eyes, you don't belong in a clubhouse. And I couldn't agree more. That was the dumbest thing I've ever seen, yeah, to take out a pitcher who's so hot and basically give up the game and the World Series.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a give and take situation, because the Tampa Bay Rays are a huge analytics-driven team that they really use these analytics to find value in places where other teams might not see value, to build a World Series caliber team with a smaller payroll. But then by this analytic type managing, it almost came back to bite them, because they lived and died by it, where their strategy that had gotten this far ended up being their undoing. This is one of those situations where you got to sit back and say, maybe let's let Snell face this lineup for the third time around, because he's in the middle of something that we don't want to break up.
And I want to know if Kevin Cash has ever seen Moneyball all the way through, because at the end of that movie, they don't win the World Series. They don't. The A's do not win the World Series at the end of Moneyball.
But they had fun along the way.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just with it. I mean, there's obviously a reason he's in the MLB getting paid to be a manager, but just in that situation, it was just shocking just the way he pulled him, because the way he was able to pitch was outstanding. I believe he had 9 strikeouts heading into the sixth inning, only allowed a couple of hits. I don't think he let up a run yet, because his team was up 1-0, so the defense was doing their job. All of a sudden, they pull him, and then they go through like 3-4 pitchers just to try and like stop the bleeding, and none of that could happen, and it cost him the World Series. And after he was Kevin Cash had an interview, and he's like, yeah, I just felt that it was kind of his time to leave, like he was giving up. But Snell was like, I had more to give. Even though I was facing the lineup for the third time, I would have adjusted to their performances accordingly.
Because he's a good pitcher, and that's what good pitchers do. And so it's just frustrating that a manager would fail to see that.
I know, and yeah, frustrating with it, because you think, like, just keep the pitcher in, and like maybe until he gets himself in a bit of a jam, then bring in a reliever.
Because nobody would be mad at Kevin Cash if, you know, he left Blake Snell in, and then in the seventh, Blake Snell gives up a 2-run homer, because as fans were thinking, okay, that made sense, because he had 9 strikeouts. And so he was hot, and he just got tired. And so that's not on you. But when you take out a guy who's clearly playing the game of his life, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's almost like taking Kyle Hendricks out of Game 7 of the World Series, where it feels like managers are always afraid to make that move too early. They'd rather make the move one inning too early than one inning too late. And this was another situation where we saw that, where it directly cost their team a championship.
Took him out 3 innings too early.
Yeah, definitely a momentum shifter. It was frustrating for the Tampa Bay Rays. But speaking of managers and being frustrated, White Sox fans are, some of them are frustrated over the new hiring that they had. The White Sox announced that Tony La Russa is going to be their manager in the dugout next season.
Well, yeah. Leo, you want to take this one?
So this is just a mind-boggling situation. So for a little bit of context, Tony La Russa managed the White Sox from 1979 to 1986. His firing largely came at the hands of Ken Hawk Harrelson. This was a relationship that ended poorly, and the White Sox owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, has been good friends with LaRussa since that firing. He made up for some of the bad blood that happened with the firing. Fine. Well, the White Sox finally have the managerial position open, and they are over the rebuild. They are at the top of the hill now. They could have had the pick of any manager they wanted here. Now, this is a team that claims they are forward-thinking, that they want to change the game, that even Rick Hahn said that they are looking for an analytics-driven manager. They want a manager that can encapsulate what's new with baseball, with this culture they've been developing, this culture of fun, with Tim Anderson and his bat flips, Eloy Jimenez wearing his shirt practically unbuttoned on the field, and Luis Robert's chains. And so what do? They hire old man baseball, Tony La Russa, the fun police, that is just, I don't think he's going to clash with this culture they've been developing. And it goes against everything they said they were going to do, that they wanted a forward-thinking manager, that they wanted to somebody analytic-driven. And part of the reason that coming out in the months or the weeks that came out following Rick Renteria's firing, one of the causes for debate between him and Rick Hahn was that in that final series against the Cubs, when Wilson Contreras did the bat flip and the Sox threw at him, Rick Hahn was not pleased with that and did not agree with Ricky on that, and that they had somewhat of a falling out over that. And so now you're going to go hire somebody that believes in that philosophy, that wants to throw at batters, that doesn't believe in bat flips. It just goes against everything the Sox have been building culture-wise. And it's going to, I think it could create a horrible culture inside the clubhouse.
And we've talked about this before, that the main problem that the MLB has is their inability to embrace change and go with what is popular with a large majority of their fans. And my hope here, as you know, an ultimate Sox optimist, my hope is that Tony La Russa has become wise with age and recognizes that in order for this team to win, they need to play in a style that suits them, which is a style that has more attitude to it. And that's one of the things that makes this White Sox team so fun to watch, is there are so many personalities who are also very fun to watch individually. And I think that Rick Hahn understands that. And so I am hoping that Tony La Russa will understand it as well, because for as much guff as we give him for being, you know, an old man and he's been around the league and he's kind of like a hard-o when it comes to baseball tradition, he's not dumb, right? And I think he understands, or I hope that he understands, that it's important to let this team be what it is in order for them to be successful.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. It's not like it's someone who's inexperienced coming in like their first year trying to managing the MLB. He's been a four-time manager of the year, and he's been a three-time World Series champion, one of which was with the St. Louis Cardinals in 2011, which was when he last managed in the MLB.
Let's not forget what happened in Game 5 of the 2011 World Series, where Tony La Russa accidentally warmed up the wrong bullpen pitcher in a clutch situation, and that I think that cost him the game. I think they lost that game. But so this was part of the problem his last season with the Cardinals was he was getting names wrong. He was forgetting things. He wasn't exactly aging well. He was making mistakes in the clutch situation. The Cardinals kind of forced him out because of that. So that does worry me a little bit, that the last time we saw him managing, that he was making such crucial mistakes like that.
That was
a decade ago.
Lucky for La Russa, all of the Sox bullpen, with the exception of like two guys, is all bad. So you can't really make a mistake because you're just subbing one bad guy out for another. But regardless, I am holding a lot of hope that the White Sox organization knows what they're doing, bringing in La Russa. I'm very glad it wasn't anybody affiliated with the Astros cheating scandal, a.k.a. AJ Hinch. But regardless, I won't know until we see him in action and what his managerial style is like.
Yeah, and you know, if you want to take the optimistic route, he had some good teams in Oakland. He's won wherever he's gone. He's handled big personalities before. Obviously, he had the Bash Brothers in Oakland with McGuire and Canseco, so he knows how to maybe deal with some of these elite players that the Sox have had. And I actually remember reading, of course I couldn't find the article now when I need it, but like I remember reading when the concept of the opener first came up, I remember reading that the Rays, I think it was Kevin Cash, was saying that he adopted it from something that La Russa had experimented with in Oakland. So maybe, just maybe, he does understand how the modern game works. But part of what troubles me is that if you watch today's press conference with about the hiring, was that Rick Hahn did not seem pleased. He was basically distancing himself through his body language and through his words about this. And that was kind of some of the reports that were coming out of Chicago, was that this was not Rick Hahn's guy, that this order came from above. So that troubles me that there is a discord in the organization where the general manager, who's been allowed to call the shots this whole rebuild, who was had to beg basically to trade Chris Sale and Jose Quintana and finally tear things down, that they've given him so much control. And now when he finally gets to pick his manager, when the team's ready to start a six-year window of championships, that he didn't get the final say in that.
And I think that if this does fall apart, I think Jerry Reinsdorf will come to his senses very quickly, because like you said, it's a short window. Like, yes, a lot of these guys are very young and very good, but you're not going to be able to pay all of them forever. Jose Abreu is approaching the end of his window, although it wouldn't look like it after this season. But I think that everybody in the organization understands that it's a limited amount of time you have to make a run at a World Series. And so if in a year or two the Sox have not seen any improvement, they're still going out in the ALDS, I think that Jerry Reinsdorf will realize that we need to make a change fast in order to take advantage of this God-given gift all these great players.
But at that point, you would have already wasted two seasons of this window. Like, these years are so precious that you need to get the managerial hire correct. Like, look at the Cubs. They got their hire right, and they really only had one shot to win the World Series, and they got it. But so if you get this hire wrong, the first hire wrong, it doesn't bode well for the second one, because then you've already wasted so much time, and players may need to be moved, and maybe some players won't pan out. So, like, I just feel this frustrates me, because it just feels like it wasn't the hire that we maybe wanted to see, but it's the one we're stuck with. So as a Sox fan, I'm hoping it pans out, because I don't know what any other option would be.
And like you mentioned, Joey, it's going to be like we're going to have to see what happens. We don't know what's going to go on. Some people are saying he might not meld well with this young core that the White Sox have, but we have to see what they're able to do. I mean, he's going to bring in some baseball knowledge that he has from, as you mentioned, coaching guys like McGuire and Kinsenko, but also try and get in this mindset of the White Sox as well. So they're going to have to try and meet in the middle somewhere if they're going to want to succeed. And like you mentioned, Leo, they got to make sure they get it right, because let's say if they're starting the season, let's say if it is going to be a 162-game season and they're all of a sudden like 5-12, maybe, yeah, something's got to be down, and maybe you got to give him a talking to and maybe fire him early in the season. But yeah, you're just going to have to see what happens. And with that, that'll just about end our conversation here for talking about the White Sox. But that brings us to our Red Zone question of the week. With everything going on with Tony La Russa, we are going to ask you, our listeners, how do you think Tony La Russa will do in his first season with the Chicago White Sox? Will they be World Series champions? Will they be a playoff team? Will they be below 500 or something else? Please comment below if you get other. We will post that poll, and we would love to hear from you and your thoughts. But like I said, that'll wrap up. When we come back, we got our news and sports guests coming in the studio to talk some Bears football. You're listening to The Red Zone.
Hello, Snapchat. Today, we'll be taking...
This is Steph Jankowicz from Redbird Volleyball, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. And right now we are pleased to be joined by our news and sports guest this week, Andrew Evola. Andrew, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me, guys.
And every week, per tradition, we bring a news and sports guest on the show to talk about a topic of their choosing. And given that you are a Bears fan and how they've been struggling in this last game, and a lot of people are questioning them, that they're not really a legit above 500 team. So take it away.
I mean, I don't even know where to start. Monday night was very frustrating. I don't know about you guys watching the game. I was pretty worked up. I just, some of the play calling and how the game went, it just kind of, some of it didn't make sense to me. Like, for example, when Foles threw, I think it was his first pick in the when we had it in the end zone, we were in the red zone. It was in a fade to Darnell Mooney in the back corner in double coverage. I don't know about you guys, I wasn't too sure of that play call, you know, because Darnell Mooney's more of a deep threat speed kind of guy, and you choose to throw it up to him in the back corner of the end zone when you have Jimmy Graham, Allen Robinson. I mean, even Cole Kmet had a couple nice catches in the game. And just some other things throughout the game that just didn't really make sense to me.
To talk specifically about that Foles interception to Darnell Mooney, I love Darnell Mooney. I think he's an incredibly talented rookie. And so I don't mind the call to go to him. But I think Nick Foles has to recognize that, oh, man, this guy has two blue jerseys around him. Maybe I shouldn't throw into double coverage where the Rams secondary has been picking us apart all game. And it's just what I was so frustrated about Monday night was there were so many decisions made by the offense that just made no sense. And it was humiliating to watch the Bears get absolutely massacred on prime time.
And especially in the fourth quarter, there was no sense of urgency like they were in the past few games of trying to come back. They were just we're probably just going to lose. But with everything on offense, it's not really coherent. There's pieces here and there. As you mentioned, the rookies have been having dominant seasons, Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet. But just they're not able just to move the ball. As you mentioned, their first red zone trip, which didn't happen until the second half, as you mentioned, corner of the end zone, they get intercepted. Nick Foles is a veteran quarterback. I mean, that's a rookie mistake. You got to be able to just read the secondary and read the defense, see if you're getting blitzed, and then, you know, if there's no one open, get out of the pocket and try and run it for yourself.
Yeah, and the frustrating thing about the play calling is that Matt Nagy, I was just watching a highlight montage from the 2018 season. Matt Nagy was a creative play caller then, that he was running lots of different jet sweeps, some play action moves, bootlegs, some trick plays even. And it feels like that creativity has not been there this season, that something broke mid-year last year, where Nagy's play calling, his creative play calling that kind of kept defenses guessing, hasn't been there, that he's resorted to this almost scared style of play calling, where the worst was that fourth and one when they just knew, everybody knew that when they lined up under center, Cordarrelle Patterson in the backfield, and everybody in the stadium knew it was going to him, and the Rams stopped it right there. He's just fallen into this predictable kind of rut, what he's doing play calling, and it's frustrating because we've seen in the past that he can be a good coach, and then now it's he's stuck in his ways, or he's scarred by what's happened in the past couple seasons.
And he has that. That was a big story in 2018 when the Bears went to the playoffs. The fact that he had the little sticker on his play sheet that said BU, right? But that we haven't seen that, because in the game on Monday night, he was running all this weird pre-snap motion that we haven't seen before. But want to know who runs pre-snap motion all the time? Sean McVay in the LA system and Jim Harbaugh in the Ravens system. And so he's trying to pick these pieces of offenses that are really successful in the NFL and make this Frankenstein's monster-esque offense that he thinks is going to get stuff done, but it's not, and these guys don't know the system. And you heard Brian Griese on the broadcast, which was a total breach of journalist trust from Nick Foles, because clearly Nick Foles had said this off the record, but Brian Griese said that Nick Foles will get play calls from Matt Nagy that he knows are not going to work, and he still calls them. And it's just ridiculous when your own quarterback, who is clearly Nick Foles' is Matt Nagy's guy, because otherwise Trubisky wouldn't have gotten benched in the first place, but that's your guy, and he does not trust the plays you're calling. That is absolutely ridiculous. And I think Matt Nagy should give up play calling at least for a couple weeks so he can figure out what he wants this offense's identity to be, because we cannot have our only touchdown be scored by Eddie Jackson every week. I love Eddie Jackson more than anybody else on the face of the planet, but that doesn't change the fact that he can't be our only offensive production as a safety.
Right, and the thing, if Nagy maybe did give up his play calling, I think he still would be an effective coach, because you see the players, they still love him, that they don't give up on him, that they are bought in. So it's not like if he gives up play calling, he's admitting that he's a failure. He could still give up his play calling and be an effective coach, and it may be worth something looking into. But it just seems like he's almost stuck in his ways where he doesn't want to give up that ability.
Yeah, I mean, coming back to Joey, what you said about the guys not really knowing the plays, I don't know if you guys noticed this. There was one instance that stood out to me for sure was when we had Darnell Mooney in the backfield, and Foles kind of was, like, directing him to where to stand in the backfield. Like, and obviously he's a rookie. He probably still learned the playbook. But, I feel like by this time now you should at least kind of have an idea. And, because it's a formation we've never seen this year with Darnell Mooney in the backfield, and we had to burn a timeout. I think it was in the second half because Darnell Mooney wasn't in the right spot. And I noticed that it happened a couple times. I can't remember exactly what other players, but it was definitely noticeable in the game, just that offense was not in sync. And it doesn't help that our offensive line is not the greatest in the world, as you could see, as Aaron Donald kind of torched us the whole game and was really present throughout the game, which, he's a very impactful player. So, you kind of just got to try to contain him. But, he was just dominant throughout the whole game.
And I don't know. The offense being out of sync, I think it was twice, right, where they took a delay of game penalty coming out of a timeout. Like, you should not see that at the NFL level. Like, that's something you don't even see in high school, where teams are that out of sync coming out of a timeout. So there's just been a discord from top to bottom with this offense.
And, Andrew, you were talking about the offensive line a little bit, and I was watching the Bears post-game show, and I was texting my dad about it because he was just as mad about the loss as I was. And we were talking about something that Olin Krutz said. Bear center for 10-plus years. He was a staple of the Bears O-line. And he said that Cody Whitehair is the worst player on the Bears offensive line because he lacks the ability to recognize blitzes and other defensive formations and call them out to the other offensive linemen. So they don't know what they're doing. And it's just a complete cluster of guys who don't know what they're doing on that offensive line.
Yeah, you definitely could tell because, as you guys probably noticed throughout the whole game, Foles was throwing off his back foot. And, he had Darnell Mooney a couple times where if he could have got just a little more time, I'm confident that Foles, being the veteran that he is, he can make those throws downfield to Mooney, and we might have had a couple touchdowns because I think it was late in the game. I think it would have been late third quarter, early fourth quarter where we were backed up on our own at, our own, 2 or 3 yard line, and Mooney had, he burned Jalen Ramsey, actually, and it just, Foles had no time to throw the ball to get it to him because if he would have had any fraction of more of a time, he probably would have got the ball off, and who knows, with Darnell Mooney's speed, might have been a touchdown pass, which would have immensely changed the momentum of the game.
Ed, you're absolutely right. And to talk about Darnell Mooney some more, that clip where he burnt Jalen Ramsey off the line was absolutely nuts. And it was so sad watching him beat him and then look up. And then you can see in his body language that he realizes the ball is going to be 10 yards ahead of him. But it's just, this Bears offense is absolutely anemic, and it's not going to get any better because Allen Robinson is on concussion protocol right now after that helmet-to-helmet contact hit that wasn't called, but we don't have to get into the ref's bias against the Bears. But without Allen Robinson and a couple of key pieces in our O-line missing, it's hard to be optimistic about the future of the Bears, especially with the Saints this week and then the Titans next week.
Yeah, you mentioned it, just they're not going to be as healthy as they would want to be. You said Allen Robinson on concussion protocol. Cordarrelle Patterson is questionable as well. He has a quad injury. He didn't practice on Wednesday. And then defensively, Eddie Jackson was limited in practice. Khalil Mack didn't practice.
Khalil Mack being questionable means he's going to play. I think he has been questionable every single game this season. But still, the defense being banged up and the offense, it's a bad look for a team that's already kind of struggling to find their identity, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and the fact that some of your key defensive players are getting hurt, it doesn't bode well because we saw it last week where the defense was just being asked to do so much, and they were hanging in that game. They were keeping the Bears' stagnant offense in that game all the way until the end when they just couldn't anymore, where the Bears asked so much of this defense that now once pieces start falling off there, it could get ugly. And that's basically what we saw last year, where we saw Roquan miss a couple of games. Daniel Trevathan was out for the year. Hicks was missing for some time. Where once you start taking pieces off the defense, that might fall off too, and things could get really bad really fast.
Yeah, for me too, honestly, the defensive side, I love our defensive guys. You got Mack, Eddie Jackson, Kyle Fuller. the rookie Jalen Johnson has been amazing this year, which I think he was our third-round pick, which is – I think Eddie Jackson was a third-round pick too, actually. But it's so fun to watch this defense. And then it's just like once it gets to the offensive side, it gets so frustrating. And, you know, and the defense did all they could do the whole game. I mean, they stopped the Rams and forced a field goal. I think it was – they had them on their maybe – we were on our own two-yard line maybe, and we made three big stops – or three big plays, you know, to create them force a field goal. And it's just – the defense can only do so much. I mean, yeah, they had a we had a touchdown, which, I mean, that's typical for us. But you know, they can't score every touchdown. We got to get some points on the board too, offensively, to at least help the defense and keep them off the field a little,
And it's really going to be interesting to see, especially with a bunch of fans raising questions, since the Bears are going to have two big games coming up. They're going to face the Saints on Sunday. Then after that, Joey, you said they're going to face the Titans. And those are two big teams. Titans played a good game against the Steelers. And then Saints, although they had their struggles at the beginning of the season, you're facing Drew Brees, who is a veteran quarterback on that team.
It's going to be we had Blake Hornstein on last week, and he said that these next three games are going to tell a lot about what the Bears are made of, and it's looking like that's the case. And hopefully these next two games we will get to see that the Bears are resilient and that they won't let one bad game get into their heads.
For sure. We will have to see what happens as they take on the Saints on Sunday. But if you want to find out who we think is going to win that game, you're going to have to stick around, because after the break, it's going to be the best segment in sports talk radio, the Pick Six. You're listening to the Red Zone of the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Welcome back to the Red Zone. We all love hearing that sounder. You know what time it is. It is the Pick Six. This is going to be week eight. Just about or almost halfway through the NFL season. So the way this works is we pick six NFL games and we basically just pick the winners of them. Taking a look at the standings, the guests really redeemed themselves. Had a tough week the first time they came on the show, but Blake stepped up for him, went 5-1 this week. They're still in last place, but they're now 22-20.
Shout out to the dirty cheesehead, Blake Horn.
Then we got a three-way tie for second place. It is Joey, Steve, and myself, all 25-17.
And it's tough. I've had a couple bad weeks. But you know what? We're coming back. I'm coming back for the throne. Leo, watch your head.
Yeah, as Joey just said, Leo, still the top dog, 27-15. So he's got a two-game lead on all of us. We will see what happens.
You come at the king, you best not miss.
All right. All righty. As usual, we got a good slate of games. We will see. I mean, we're starting, I would say, with probably the best Thursday night football game.
Hey, we had Giants-Eagles last week, so nothing's going to top that.
I mean,
that one was so bad that it was fun last week. Nothing better than Daniel Jones on a 70-yard run and just tripping.
Oh my God!
Unopposed at midfield.
And Leo, how many times did you see that clip over the course of this last week?
A lot.
Over 100, didn't you? What you see? I'd say over 100 everywhere.
Oh yeah.
Bleacher Report must have posted that 50
yeah,
times.
Yeah, the amount
oh
of like
God.
Memes were. I think they were saying that like with the World Series too. They're like the Rays World Series hopes. It's good. And he's tripping. Like yeah, the amount that was going on, then it was like tripping and going like through space. I'm like, oh my goodness. But enough talking about that. Let's get to it. The first game is the Atlanta Falcons against the Carolina Panthers. Falcons are struggling. Panthers are at home. Carolina.
Yeah, this is an easy one. Carolina has been a very middle-of-the-road team, and Atlanta has been a very bad team. So Carolina all the way.
I'm going with Carolina here. Just before the game, they tweeted out they're wearing their all-black uniform set. You cannot bet against a team wearing their Color Rush uniforms on a Thursday night. That's a rule. Carolina by a lot here.
I'm going to have to go with Carolina as well. I mean, as you've seen, Atlanta struggled all year, and Carolina's been all right, but at home, Carolina, no doubt.
Steve made an interesting pick. He's going with the struggling Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, jeez.
This NFC South matchup.
All right. You know what? All the best for him. He has to make up ground somehow.
Yep. We'll see. And another divisional matchup. This one was one of the tougher games to pick this week. The Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens. Pittsburgh, the only undefeated team left in the NFL after the Seahawks fell somehow on Sunday Night Football. But we were talking about it last week, how it was going to be a big test with their defense trying to contain Derrick Henry and the Tennessee offense. They're probably going to struggle. We'll see, especially with a dual threat quarterback like Lamar Jackson. So I think there's going to be no more undefeated teams. Baltimore is going to take it.
Hey, do you guys like the musical Hairspray?
Sure, babe. What are we sending you out for?
Oh, I was going to sing Good Morning Baltimore, but the way we got the setup right now, we're on the, Freddie and I are on the tie line, so it's like our mobile broadcasting stuff in a different studio, and I don't know if the mic would really pick up, like, you know, the full timbre of my voice and, like, really get those intricate vocal things that I do. But anyway, regardless, I'm going to go Baltimore.
I'm going to get a shake it up here a little bit. I'm going with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Really impressed by their defense. They got a very good pass rush, and I think that could force Lamar to make some mistakes here. So I'm gonna take my chances with the Steelers here.
This is tough. I'm going to have to go with Baltimore simply because Lamar Jackson, I think he is easily one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now, and I just feel like this is going to be the toughest test for the Steelers so far this year, and I think their luck's kind of going to run out, you know? I got Baltimore.
Yeah, and given this is a divisional matchup, so they're going to play them just a few weeks after that, so this is not going to be their first rodeo with Baltimore. Steve has also taken the Baltimore Ravens. Next game we get to, it is the New Orleans Saints. They are going to be marching into Chicago, hoping for a victory. Oh, my goodness. My aunt's probably going to come at me for this one.
Well, Freddie, if you... Freddie, if you pick the Saints, you know what's going to happen. So go ahead and say it, and I can call you a coward, and we can all move on.
I don't know. It's just the way the Bears are playing. Like, I initially would have picked the Bears, given the way they've been playing. But the way they played against the Rams, there was no urgency. They couldn't get anything moving. I'm going to go New Orleans.
All right. Freddie's an absolute coward. We're bear down until we die over here.
This is the meatball fan in me, but I'm going with the Bears.
Come on, Leo.
It's going to be in the low 40s on Sunday in Chicago. Drew Brees playing in bear weather. Bear down, baby.
Like Leo said, cold weather in Chicago. Hey, favors the Bears any day of the week against a team from the South. Bears all the way.
Alrighty. Steve is going with New Orleans.
Of course he is.
Next one is the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. Yes, Seattle's coming off. Somehow they lost that game against Arizona, but they're going to let Russ cook. DK is going to rebound. Seattle.
Now, let's hope DK doesn't rebound too much, though, because I do have Tyler Lockett as my wide receiver one, and he had 56 points PPR last week, but I'm also picking Seattle.
I'm going to go with Seattle here, though. I do want to put a little more respect on San Francisco because I was pretty critical of them on last week's show, and they destroyed the Patriots. So I think despite all the injuries they've had, they're still a good team, but I'm still going to pick the Seahawks here.
Yeah, I mean, I think Seattle's going to bounce back this week. Russell Wilson has been an MVP candidate so far this year, and I just think it's going to be too much for San Francisco to handle.
We'll get the brooms. That's a clean sweep. Steve also taking the Seattle Seahawks to win this divisional matchup. Next one, we got another divisional matchup in the NFC East, which has been a struggling division.
To say the least.
Yeah.
Struggling to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw one thing on, I think it was like Sunday Night Football, it was like the NFC West is best and then East is least.
Yes.
I'm like, wow.
Good wordplay.
I'm like, wow. The broadcast crew or the production crew there, wow, really knows it. But it's the Dallas Cowboys against Philadelphia Eagles. Dallas has been struggling without Dak. Now Andy Dalton's out there going to their third string quarterback from James Madison. I think Philly's going to win it.
Oh my God. I thought you were hyping up the Cowboys. I thought you were going Ben DiNucci. But yeah, Philadelphia is going to absolutely terrorize Dallas. No question about it.
Yeah, despite Gucci DiNucci starting for the Cowboys, I'm going with the Philadelphia Eagles here. It's just too easy of a pick here.
Yeah, I mean, it's Dallas has been struggling. Obviously, third string quarterback now, Philadelphia, no doubt.
Steve also going with Philadelphia. And now we've got our final game. This one. Love this game. This is going to be the hardest game of the week. It is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the New York Football Giants.
Woo! Heater.
Yeah. I mean, who knows if it's going to be a Giants game like Daniel Jones where it's going to start off well and then they're going to take a tumble, but it's hard to pick against Tom Brady, especially the way he's been playing the past couple weeks, really getting Gronk going as well, trying to get that connection back. So Tampa Bay should take this one, no problem.
It's not all bad for New York this season. They've had a couple guys really stand out, especially on the defensive side, who have kind of made this season at least a little bit watchable for New York. And I think they can squeeze out a couple more wins on the season, but not against this streaking Tampa Bay team. Buccaneers all the way.
I think we're forgetting Tom Brady has had some bad luck against the New York Giants in some pretty big games before. But needless to say, I still think the Bucs are a much better team than the Giants here.
Yeah, I mean, Tampa Bay has really impressed me this year, honestly. From when I seen they were going to sign Tom Brady earlier this year, I honestly was a little skeptical of them. But for how they've been playing, definitely have to go with Tampa Bay.
Steve is also going with Tampa Bay. So it looks like three of the six games we picked, it's all been a sweep. So it's really going to be those first three games that are going to shift the standings in some way, shape, or form. Well, that will just about do it for this week's edition of the Red Zone Podcast. Just to recap what we talked about in this hectic show, opened up talking about the IHSA sports and everything going on there between the IHSA Board of Directors and Governor Pritzker, how he ruled a couple hours ago that he is moving the basketball season from the winter to the spring. Then we talked about Tony La Russa being hired as the new manager for the Chicago White Sox, how he's going to perform there. Then we got Andrew Evola on the show to talk about the Chicago Bears, how they've been struggling but might be able to bounce back in the Windy City as the Saints go marching into Chicago. And finally, it was the best segment in Sports Talk Radio, the Pick Six. If you missed any part of tonight's show, it will be online shortly at WZND.com. And make sure to follow us on Twitter at WZND Sports and at 103.3 WZND on Twitter, Facebook, and everything. Make sure to answer our question of the week. For everyone here at the Red Zone, you've been listening to the Red Zone here on the Pulse of Rebel Nation, 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of the Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into the Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND.
Yo, it's Billie Eilish.
This is Hit Music.
What's going on, guys? It's Post Malone.
WZND LP Bloomington Normal is 103.3 and WZND.com.
All my hits are right here.